Chapter 16. 8 May 1936. Joey wheeled the tea urn into the kitchen and made himself a fresh cup. By the time he'd taken tea round the office, he didn't fancy what was left in the urn. He pinched two biscuits from the tin reserved for Greg Mortimer and headed back to the mailroom. This was built under the main staircase, so at one end the ceiling came down to within inches of the floor, making it a claustrophobic place. He was well aware he spent more time here than the job justified, but this was where he had privacy. An overlarge table took up most of the space. He always kept a heap of letters and papers on it, waiting to be sorted. Then, if one of the bosses happened to come in, it looked as though he had plenty to do. He slumped into the only chair, tipped it backwards, and put his feet up on the table to make himself comfortable. This was where he worked out his plans to make more money from the company. He'd been mulling over new ways to get goods out of the building for a long time. There were all sorts of things, especially in the office, that he might be able to sell. The possibilities of this had become clear last winter, when he'd been asked to work late one night during stock-taking. He'd been reluctant at first, until he'd found that Evans's was a different place when the workforce went home. He realized immediately that this would suit his purpose better. He'd been told he wouldn't be expected to count stock, only write down figures on clipboards. In practice, it turned out he was required to hump cartons and boxes round, dust down shelves, and make tea for the stockmen. He'd been coming back with the big teapot along the dark passage from the canteen when he saw a ghost-like shadow flitting ahead of him. He could even hear the clink of metal as though he were in chains. Joey had a hearty contempt for nervous men, but the mugs were rattling on his tray. It had been pitch dark since 5:30, and he'd thought only the four stockmen were in the building with him, and they were all wearing khaki drill coats. He lunged for the next light switch and called, "Who's there?" The light failed to work. "Hello?" The grey-haired ghost was waiting for him now. Joey knew he was dragging his steps, still half convinced it was a supernatural being. At 15 yards he knew it was human. A man wearing a dark grey pullover and grey slacks. He spoke. "You one of the stockmen, then?" "Yes," Joey said weakly. "Who are you?" "Night watchman. Elijah Jones." He had a great bunch of keys fastened to his belt that jingled as he moved. Joey breathed more easily. Why had he not thought of a watchman? "You got a cup of tea for me there?" "Yes, sure, if you've got a cup." "Hang on, I'll fetch my mug." Under the brighter light of the boiler room, Joey thought he still looked ghost-like. He was short and thin to the point of emaciation, with a grey-lined face. He took short, even steps, so that he seemed to float along. Joey watched him take an enamel mug from a canvas haversack hanging on a nail. "What's that, then?" he asked when the man came back, nodding towards a string contraption hanging across the corner of the boiler room. "It's me hammock. I bring it with me. Got to get some rest. Good place there. Nice and warm always." "How many watchmen are there?" "How many does it take? There's only me. Well, I work 5 nights. Tommy Lowther does the other two." By the time they'd reached the stockroom, it had occurred to Joey that it would pay him to make a friend of the night watchman. The stockmen knew him. They all put down their clipboards and fell on the tee. "Still doing the two, then, Eli?" "Sure, got to, haven't I? I've got 7 kids to feed and clothe." "Pity you didn't start sooner. You might have had fewer kids. Should stop you getting any more, though." "Eli's moonlighting," one of them explained to Joey. "He works for Camel Laird's in the day and comes here at night." "That's right, isn't it, Eli?" "How do you manage without sleep?" Joey asked, appalled at the thought. They all sniggered. "He sleeps here, of course." "There's not so much going on at night." "You're doing too much," Joey said, running his eyes over Eli's frail figure and lined face. "It'll kill you if you keep on." "Here, don't you be saying anything to that Mr. Gleason or anyone in the office. I don't want them giving me the sack." "Course I won't," Joey assured him. Surely this gave him some sort of a hold. "It's not as if I don't do the job properly.
I bring my alarm clock. Every 2 hours I wake up and walk round the whole place.
I bet, one of the stockmen said. Bet you settle down at 10 and sleep like a baby.
You'd have to keep going. How many years you been doing this now?
Nearly 9.
But the youngest is over 9, Eli.
There's never been anything wrong. I've always given satisfaction.
Bet you set your alarm for 6 o'clock in the morning. That will give you just enough time to make a cup of tea and have a wash before you go off.
Do you always sleep in the boiler room? Joey asked, trying to make it appear an innocent question.
Now I do. Used to use the first aid room. A good couch there with pillow and red blankets. But sister got nasty, though I made sure I left everything as I found it. Now I bring my own hammock and just borrow a blanket.
Stock-taking started again, and Eli took a walk round. He was back quite soon and spent the next hour talking to whoever would listen. Joey felt the gang would have finished sooner if Eli had left them alone. He set about being as friendly as he could. By 7 o'clock the gang was hungry. When they estimated the job would take at least until 10, Joey suggested he go out and get fish and chips. He was hungry too.
"Do you want some, Eli?"
"Yes, be a bit of a treat for once. Bring me a penneth of chips and a tuppenny fish. I'll have to let you out. The yard gate's padlocked.
How am I going to get in again if the place is all locked up?
I'll hang about, listen for you.
You won't hear me outside at the gate.
You'll have to lend him the keys, Eli," the stockman said.
"Not supposed to let them out of my possession," he grunted. "Not till I hand them over to Miss Peacock in the morning."
"Joey's all right," the most junior stockman said. Joey had had a pint with him down at the Dog and Whistle the week before. "We don't want him stuck outside with our chips going cold."
"I'll look after the keys, Eli." "Here, then, and see you do."
Eli slipped 2 keys off the ring that jangled at his belt.
"This one's to the door on the loading bay, and this to the yard gate. Lock up behind you as you go out."
The keys were cold against his palm, but his cheeks were burning with excitement. He had to stop himself breaking into a run as he headed to the cloakroom first. He took 2 half-used tablets of soap and made impressions of both keys before balancing the soap carefully on top of his lunch paper inside his haversack. Chance had brought him a wonderful opportunity. He had keys made from the impressions and tested them. He could get in and out of the factory at will, but was unable to get from the factory to the office. This was part of the same building, taking up 1 wing of the ground floor, and there were 2 connecting doors. Joey made a point of trying them first thing in the morning, and found they were kept locked until Eli handed his keys over to the office staff when they came in. The office could also be reached directly from the street through the main entrance, and through a side door which was used by junior staff. Another opportunity to work out of hours came shortly afterwards. The office was being redecorated, and the painters were in for 2 weeks, working in the evenings and at weekends. Joey was asked to come in an hour earlier in the mornings to get the furniture back in place so that the staff could get straight on with their work when they came in. The cleaners also used the side door, and their forewoman had the key. Joey arrived earlier and earlier, until one morning he was waiting at the door for her. He watched her unlock it using a Yale key. She put her key ring in her coat pocket and hung that behind the kitchen door. He had to hover nearby for ages until all the women were in, had hung their coats in the kitchen, and had started work. Then, with his heart in his throat, he sorted through the coats swinging on the door. The shapeless green tweed was now the lowest on the peg. His fingers closed on the key ring. There were only 2 keys on it, and the other was not a Yale, so he knew which he needed. The only soap on the sink was of the kitchen variety, and on the hard side. He was still trying to press the key in evenly when he heard footsteps coming back. He shoved everything into his jacket pocket just as she was coming round the door. His mouth was suddenly dry. God help him if he was caught doing this.
"What are you up to, then?"
Joey was afraid he looked as guilty as he felt. His cheeks were burning. He had to turn his back on her. He saw a cup on the drain board.
"Just getting a drink of water," he said, filling it. "Haven't you made tea this morning?"
"You cheeky bugger!
"'It's hardly worth you coming in, if you're going to hang around in here.' The woman was feeling through the pile of coats. For an awful moment he thought she was checking whether the key was still in there. Then she took a packet of cigarettes from a black coat pocket, put one in her mouth, and lit it from the pilot light on the stove. Joey drank the cup of water and fled to the mail room. He didn't dare breathe until he'd got the door closed and his back against it. When his hands stopped shaking, he made sure the impression was the best he could make, hid the soap, and polished the key. He knew he had to return it to the coat pocket before the cleaners left. He could feel his heart pounding as he went quickly to the kitchen. He opened the door, and the room was deserted. He leaned round and slid the key ring into the pocket of the green coat. Seconds later he was striding up the hall, hauling Miss Peacock's file cabinets back against the wall, putting up her curtains, telling himself he could relax. It had been easier than he'd expected, and now he could get into the office too, and no one need be any the wiser. Joey watched the local papers in which Evans's was likely to advertise the vans for sale. It was there the following Friday. "For sale by tender, two delivery vans in good condition, first registered in 1930. He read the instructions carefully. Tenders were to be sealed inside a separate envelope, together with 10% of the cash. For his plan to work, he had to have one of the vans, but he didn't mean to pay over the odds. He kept a closer watch on the incoming mail over the next week as he sorted it, removing the envelopes he guessed contained tenders. At work, the only place he could steam an envelope open was the kitchen, and during the day he was never alone there long enough. He couldn't risk being seen. He decided to take the letters home and bring them back in time for the next day's delivery. It meant he had two envelopes to cope with for each tender. The first time he managed to open and reclose them without leaving visible traces. The second, he had to add more glue, but thought they'd pass. The third time, the flap creased up when he tried to stick it back. It looked as if it had been prized open and resealed. Lizzie had been dead against him touching them at all. "I do wish you'd stop all this," she protested. "We're doing all right, Joey. We're having a good time, aren't we? If you get caught, you could go to prison. That would break us up good and proper."
"What am I going to do now?" He stared at the envelope in horror.
"A new envelope," she suggested coldly.
"But this one's been typed."
"Get there early and type it, then. Surely you can do that."
"Perhaps."
He'd never tried a typewriter.
"You'll have to," she said, "or be found out."
Joey was still trying to smooth out the creases. He'd burned both the check and the letter, except this one had been handed in and signed for. He bought paper and envelopes the next day, and an hour after everybody had gone home, he went back to the office. He knew his key would turn in the lock. He'd tried it surreptitiously one day when he'd come in late. He carried a typewriter into the mail room because he could shut himself out of Eli's sight. He found he could type with two fingers, but it took a lot of concentration. Having addressed the envelopes, he started typing his own tender. It took him longer than he'd expected. He was afraid Eli would catch him at it, and kept stopping to open the door and listen for him, afraid he'd hear the clacking typewriter. He laid his coat along the bottom of the door in the hope it might deaden the noise. It became too dark to see what he was doing. He used the torch he'd brought to shine on the typewriter, but his heart was in his throat. It was a relief to finish and put the typewriter back in its rightful place. He was having a drink of water at the kitchen sink when he heard Eli doing his round. He stepped back behind the door and held his breath. Eli came almost close enough to touch, shone a torch round the kitchen before moving on. Joey felt exhausted, but knew Eli would head back to his hammock in the boiler room, and he was safe for the moment. He decided he'd have a good look round before going home. He crept to Miss Peacock's alcove and tried the door to Greg's office. It was locked. He straightened up in dismay, remembering now seeing him lock it one day when he was going home early. He tried Matthew Mortimer's office, and that was locked too. He found all the manager's offices were locked. He wanted to swear with frustration. He'd seen them being cleaned in the mornings, and the doors standing wide open. He remembered, too, the other key he'd seen on the cleaner's key ring, and wanted to kick himself. That had to be some sort of master key that opened them all. He should have made an impression of that, too. The secretaries didn't lock their offices. They didn't lock their desks, either. Joey went carefully through most of their drawers. He found little to interest him. He would have preferred to go through Greg Mortimer's drawers. He'd wanted to go into Matthew Mortimer's office to take a look at the safe. He found it was impossible. Hell, he was engulfed by a wave of fury, but he'd been stupid enough to miss the chance when he had it. Joey bought a van in the name of Daniel Hopkins by tendering £5 more than any of the others, and Bill sent his dad in with a bundle of pound notes to pick it up. Joey was pleased. He felt he was making progress. All he needed now was to pass his driving test, and he could put his new plan into action. He had a date to take the test, but it was still 2 weeks ahead. He decided he couldn't wait that long. His luck would have to be really out if he was stopped while driving it over the next couple of weeks. He told Bill that he'd stock the van for him that night and leave it outside his house. Bill agreed to start selling the stuff the next morning. Joey had checked that Eli would be working tonight. He'd taken some of the latest sales literature from the office and put it in the van, together with the usual bills and receipts that would make Bill appear to be part of Evans's sales force. He had the van waiting outside his own front door. He'd leave it until later, when Eli would be thinking of settling down for the night. He planned a relaxed evening at home alone, glad that Lizzie was not there to ask awkward questions. Up until now, he'd told her everything. It had helped to talk things through. He'd wanted to involve her and have her opinions and ideas. But Lizzie had lost her nerve. He knew she was worried about what he got up to. She nagged at him and kept saying the risks were enormous. He was afraid she wouldn't keep her mouth shut if anything went wrong. She was making him nervous and adding to the danger at the same time. Reluctantly, he decided the less she knew, the better. Joey didn't feel relaxed. He was on edge, plain nervous as the clock ticked round. At 9 o'clock he made the sandwiches they usually had before going to bed. It was some comfort to think it would all be over by the time he sat down to eat them. He thought of scribbling a note telling Lizzie to go to bed and not to worry, in case it took longer than he expected and he wasn't able to collect her. He started, but tore it up. Everything would go according to plan. He didn't want her to know anything out of the ordinary had taken place. Then he made up the fire and pulled on a navy blue polo-necked jersey. He had butterflies in his stomach by the time he was driving along the Newchester Road. He stopped to buy fish and chips for two. Eli was the one component of his plan he still had to cope with. He was hoping to give him to understand that loading the van in the middle of the night was part of Joey's job. Eli hadn't seemed all that bright. By the time he came to unlock the yard gate, he felt on tenterhooks. He drove through and locked it behind him. He'd forgotten about the security lights in the yard. He'd have preferred less light. He backed up to the loading bay and opened the van doors. He didn't need his key to get inside. The door opened, and Eli, looking tired and frail, came out.
"Nobody told me you were coming," he grumbled. "What you doing here at this time of night?"
Joey stood on the running board to reach the hot parcels of chips in the front of the van and passed the fragrant scent under Eli's nose.
"Brought us some supper. Where shall we have it?"
"Well..." Somewhat mollified, Eli led the way into the boiling shop, sat down on an old form and started to tuck in.
"That won't be all you've come for, will it?"
Joey didn't have much appetite.
"I've come to load the van," he said.
"What with?"
"Toffee, of course."
He tried to make it sound a bit of a fag. Eli's eyes were studying him intently.
"Now? Got a nerve expecting me to work at night, haven't they? They never load at night. Come off it."
"In future they will be. Things have changed. They'll be different from now on."
"Nobody's told me."
"They must have forgotten." Joey slid another chip nonchalantly into his mouth. This wasn't going as well as he'd hoped. They never forget that sort of thing. There was a more decisive tone to Eli's voice. Where's your papers?
What papers?
The usual papers, of course. You've got to have authorization, lad. So many trays of Devon toffee, so many nut and raisin.
Well, I haven't, Joey said, trying to stay calm. He must keep his wits about him.
Eli, exasperated now, had forgotten his chips. You can't just take what you want. I'll have to phone Mr. Stickler. He makes out...
No, Joey said firmly. He'd have to put his backup plan into operation.
You're not going to say anything to anybody, or I'll have something to say to Mr. Gleason about you moonlighting.
What's this? Blackmail?
Eli's lined face was twisting with resentment. No, of course not. I was hoping we'd be mates.
Mates? How can we be mates? You're up to no good.
Mates, because I'm going to pay you, Eli. I'll pay you the same as Evans's pay you, so you'll have three wages coming in. That can't be bad.
How long will that last? We'll both get the sack when they find out.
They aren't going to find out, not unless you tell them. You're going to get into that hammock now and settle down as usual.
He nodded towards the corner where it was already hung up, a red blanket thrown across it.
You've not seen me. Everything has been quiet. That's all you have to say if they ask.
They're bound to miss it sooner or later.
It'll be later, if at all. Even if they do realize something's gone, they'll think it happened in the daytime.
No, you won't get away with it.
We will. I know we will. But if it comes to the worst and they find out, just keep your mouth shut.
I will.
Tell them you must have slept through it all. Better to be thought an incompetent watchman than a crooked one. That'll be the time to tell Gleason you work in the day. Then he'll believe you sleep soundly at night.
I suffer from insomnia, Eli said indignantly.
I certainly wouldn't tell him that. You'll not be wanting to work double shifts forever, will you?
No.
You'll be doing a lot less for the money I pay you, and it'll give you a chance to get a bit behind you. How old are you, Eli?
52, he said grudgingly.
What's that got to do with it?
Joey would have put him at least a decade older than that.
Can't be good for a man of your age.
He shook his head. You should be taking it easier at your time of life.
What do you do at Laird's, then?
I'm a draftsman.
Got a good trade there.
The pay isn't all that good.
I pay on the dot.
Joey took pound notes from his pocket and handed them over.
Now all you have to do is put your head down for the night. You'll see nothing, you'll do nothing, and most of all you'll say nothing. Okay? I'll be back next week sometime. Good night.
Eli trailed up to the stockroom behind him. Joey turned on him.
Good night, Eli. It's better that you don't know. Honest it is. Good night.
He heard the soft clink of keys as the man went away. All Joey had to do then was to load up. He'd discussed with Bill what was needed. He'd said plenty of Everton toffee and Devon cream fudge and as wide a variety as possible. He pushed the hand truck along the shelves in the stockrooms, piling it high. He had to take it down to the van three times and thought it damned hard work all on his own. He was careful to put the truck back exactly where he'd found it and to lock up after him. As he drove away, he wanted to sing. He'd done it. He thought he could go on doing it. He left the van outside Bill's house and put the keys through his front door as arranged. Then he walked briskly to the Lyceum and was in good time to meet Lizzie. He felt like a walk home and hoped she did. What he'd accomplished tonight was putting a real spring in his step. Joey was pleased with the way things went over the next few months. He had to pay Bill a good wage, and because he handled the money and knew just how much Joey was making, he had to hand over bonuses too. He also had to pay Eli, but at last money was coming in fast, and he felt he was really kicking Greg Mortimer.
"I'm in the money," Joey crowed, slamming a fistful of pound notes down beside Lizzie's plate.
They were just finishing breakfast one Saturday morning.
"I've really come up in the world in the 2 years we've been here."
"If you're caught, you could go down even faster."
"Come on, Lizzie, I want to buy you a present. What would you like? I've got everything I need. He saw her shiver. Don't be silly. What about going out for a slap-up meal? At a posh hotel? The Adelphi in Liverpool, if you like. No, Joey, what's the point of putting yourself in lumber for a meal out? Come on, Lizzie, he wheedled. If it's so important for you to have money, don't fritter it away. You've got things to spend it on, I'm sure.
Yes, he beamed. I've got my master plan. I don't want to know.
She flounced off to the kitchen, and he heard water rushing into the sink. Joey told himself he had to stop trying to involve Lizzie. He'd been thinking of her more as an extension of himself than another person. She'd been a useful sounding board for his plans to start with. Perhaps it was a bit too grandiose to think of setting up his own factory and making toffee too. He could pick up a lot of gear for nothing, and already had the beginnings of a sales team. If he manufactured similar stuff, even on a small scale, it would be harder to prove where it came from, if ever anything did go wrong. But would it be too much trouble? He thought it another stroke of luck when Bill explained to him that Evans's sold their toffee direct to small retailers, only on Merseyside itself. In other parts of the country it was sold through wholesalers. It meant Bill Purley could establish a new round for himself. He chose to go out beyond Chester, didn't even have to do much extra mileage. The van still carried advertisements for Evans's toffee on its sides. Everything Bill handled was exactly the same as when he'd represented the firm, except that Joey had had new receipts made out, giving the manager's name as P.B. Connell. It seemed a reasonable precaution to take, because if any of his customers had reason to write in, Joey would be alerted by the name and remove the letter when he was sorting the post. It was all working so smoothly that he had considered hiring another salesman to set up a further round. Bill had recommended Manchester. The difficult part was finding the right man. Joey was trying to decide whether it would be feasible to leave the office and do it himself. He was full of plans. The hard part was deciding which would bring in the most money for the least risk. Nowadays he made a point of chatting up the stockman as he took the mail round. He wanted to know if there were any anxieties about stock levels, or if any emergency stock-taking was about to take place. It was comforting to find there was not. Joey believed nobody had noticed that the stock was disappearing. He hoped they wouldn't for a long time. Even if they did, any lead to incriminate him would have to come from Eli. And he was no longer worried about Eli. He thought he would turn out to be as loyal as Bill. He was growing more careful now. He always parked the van in a side street outside and came in first to check that only Eli was inside. The one niggle he had was that Bill occasionally had to accept payment by check. Bill did his best to discourage this because checks had to be made out to Archibald Alfred Evans, Limited, to maintain his front, and then they couldn't cash them. He brought Joey three checks in one day, which peeved him sufficiently to get his mind moving on another idea. Why shouldn't he open an account in the name of, say, Alan Anthony Evans, and get an ink pad and rubber stamp with A.A. Evans on it to make sure there was no mention of Archibald Alfred on the checks they received? He'd use an entirely different bank, of course, and preferably one without a branch too near the factory. Suddenly the whole horizon seemed to open up. Big checks from the wholesalers flooded into the accounts department all the time. Many of them were made out to A.A. Evans. If he opened an account, some of them could be diverted to that, and it would involve him in very little physical work. No wages to pay to anyone else, either. Nobody else need know. With careful thought and planning, it ought to be easy. Joey tingled at the simplicity of it all.